Our Torah portion this week, which looks like Korah in many of our English translations, is Korach, correctly in Hebrew. And it's about a Levite that led a rebellion against Moshe and Aaron. And a lot of us have heard this story many times, and we think of it as, oh yeah, he's the guy that rose up against Moses and Aaron, and he got taught a lesson, and that's that. Bad Korach, we don't ever want to be like that. But I think there's a lot more in here that addresses us personally and the people of Israel more than a bad guy. And I'm going to try to read through about two chapters here, skipping over some for the sake of time. I don't think, if you want to follow me, I'm starting in chapter 16, Numbers 16, 1. By the way, Korach means baldness, for whatever that's worth. It's mainly a fellow's name here. And Korach, I'm going to read 1 through 3. And Korach, son of Yitzhar, son of Kehath, son of Levi, took both Dathan and Aviram, the sons of Eliab, and On, son of Peleth, sons of Reuben. And they rose up before Moshe with some of the children of Israel, 250 leaders of the congregation, called ones of the meeting, men of name. And they assembled against Moshe and against Aaron, and said to them, enough of you, for all the congregation is holy or set apart, all of them, and Yahweh is in their midst. Why then do you lift yourselves above the assembly of Yahweh? A couple of notes from this that are very interesting. One, he took Dathan and Aviram and On, sons of Reuben, with him. So first, in leading his rebellion, he infected three other people. And they, by the way, weren't Levites. Then, in the next verse in 2, it says that with some of the children of Israel, 250 leaders. So after the three, he then gained 250 more. And what's interesting about this is that he led an insurrection, an overthrow, an impeachment of Moses and Aaron, to the point that if we look over at verse 19, and Korach assembled, that's a very formal, we're on this side of the line, you're on that one, all the congregation against them. This was a powerful, powerful movement. And what's interesting to me is, with all that these people had seen, with all that they've been through, how can we be swept away with such a rebellion? And when I look back at verse 3 here, we actually see his campaign, his platform, his deceitful message. He says, enough of you. First of all, it's against Moses and Aaron. And we'll see that it's primarily directed towards Aaron. Now, okay, a quick little background here. These folks have just come out of spying out the land and then being told, you're going to die, you're not going into the land at all, ever. You're going to die in the wilderness. They mourned pretty heavily. And I'm sure there's a little bit of that left over here with, well, we can, die in the wilderness or anything else. Egypt again, whatever. It's got to be. I'm sure there was a little current there. Another thing was that Korach was not really chosen to be the leader of his clan over a younger cousin, nephew, of another, his brother's son, or his father's brother's son. I guess that's cousin. And a third thing is that the responsibility of his Levitical clan, the Korahites, the Kohathites, was to carry the most sacred items from the holy place, from the sanctuary, when they moved. and to deal with the most holy things in the sanctuary. However, they were not to touch them, and they were not to even see them or watch them being covered and wrapped, which was only the responsibility of Aaron and his sons. They were to go in, they were to take the veil down, they were to cover the ark, they were to cover everything to get ready to move, and then they, Aaron and his sons, were to assign one by one who was to carry what of these Kohathites. It's a great honor, great service, but if you're a man of selfish ambition and greed, you might get a little bit jealous of why can't even we watch? Why do, you know, they have to, you can just see there might be something there. I don't know. A little background. But look at his campaign. Enough of you, for all the congregation is set apart, all of them. Yahweh is in their midst. Why then do you lift yourselves above the assembly of Yahweh? Now it's interesting, of the Levitical camps, Moses and Aaron were out at the east side of the tabernacle, and they were the man. I mean, they were the leaders. They were the rulers. Everything, Aaron and his sons over the priests, Moses over the leaders of Israel, all of it was there. Korach is telling him that you're raising yourselves up. You're exalting yourselves. You're trying to lord it over us, and it's basically not from Yahweh, that we're all equal. I think what's interesting here about this message is it's one that we've heard throughout history in major political movements, such as communism and socialism and democracy, that we're all equal. We elect one of us as a leader. And all of this comes from generally pagan, non-believing, Israel, not, you know, just pagan cultures such as Babylon and the Greeks, which many gods weren't like us. When you see this too, you see that he has assembled the people as the power of the people against Moses and Aaron. Let's keep going a little bit here. Well, in verse 4, I just want to note, and when Moshe heard this, he fell on his face. I mean, that's humble, it's desperate, but mainly I think it was interceding and saying, Yahweh, we got a problem here. He probably doesn't know what he's doing. He's leading a bunch of these guys up against us, against you. Help him. Help them not listen. I mean, we see here that Moshe and Aaron were interceders. And that's probably more what he was saying. Not, oh, protect me or something. All right, I want to skip down to verse 8. And Moshe said to Korach, hear now, you sons of Levi. Interesting, sons, plural. We hear it was Korach and the three sons of Reuben that he gathered, and then 250 leaders. So now I would assume from that that sons of Levi means that a lot of these 250 were probably Levites, especially since they were relatively comfortable with taking a fire pan and incense. Hear now, you sons of Levi, is it little to you that the Elohim of Israel has separated you from the congregation of Israel to bring you near to himself? Gosh, isn't that enough right there? To bring you near to himself, the Elohim of Israel, to perform the service of the dwelling place of Yahweh, wow, a purpose in the kingdom, and to stand before the congregation to serve them, that's an honor. It's a very humbling honor. And that he has brought you near to himself, you and all your brothers, the sons of Levi with you, yet you seek the priesthood as well. Therefore, you and all your company are set against Yahweh. And Aaron, what is it he that you grumble against him? Moses hit the nail on the head with saying that he wanted the priesthood as well. He wasn't content with serving in the holy place by carrying the holy things. He wanted to be absolutely the top. Did not want Aaron and Moshe to be in charge anymore. Didn't see why Aaron should be. He wanted that position. It was selfish ambition. And it was this that we could all fall into, rejecting the plan of Yahweh for his life. Harak was very special. He was selected not only as the people of Israel, but separated out of the people of Israel as the Levites with his brothers, and out of the Levites to be serving in the holy place, in the temple, to be brought near to Yahweh. Folks, there is nothing greater on earth than to be brought near, to get closer, to be in the presence of, to know Yahweh, the creator of all this, who can create all this again. And he rejected that. He wasn't interested in that. He wanted more. Let's go to verse 12. And Moshe sent to call Dathan and Abiram, the sons of Eliab, and they said, "We are not coming up. We're not going to obey you. We're not going to listen to you, Moses. Is it little that you have brought us up out of a land flowing with milk and honey to kill us in the wilderness, that you would also seize total rule over us? Also, you've not brought us into a land flowing with milk and honey, nor given us inheritance of fields and vineyards. Would you bore out the eyes of these men? We are not coming up." Here we have another campaign. Here we have the Reubenites. And these guys are saying, in essence, "You brought us out of a great place of milk and honey to kill us in the wilderness." Now, granted, they had just been told, "You're not going into the promised land. You all are going to be killed in the wilderness." Okay. "Seizing the rule over us, total rule, like slavery again. Failed on your promises for the things we are going to get. Fields, vineyards." Every time we see grumbling in the scriptures from the beginning of coming out of Egypt for water, for bread, for meat, and now for vineyards and fields, it's always for things. The grumbling against Yahweh's plan for us is usually for things that we see or want or think we need. And I can tell you, my family and I have been very challenged in the area of things versus peace with whatever Yahweh is providing. 16, and the other thing about these things, when Yahweh tells Moses to separate out before he destroys Dathan and Abiram's camps, their tents and their things, he says, "And do not touch their things." And it makes it a point to say that, "And he destroyed their things with them." The reason is because those things were more important to them than Yahweh. In fact, Yahweh isn't even mentioned in Dathan and Abiram's case. But those things are idols. And those idols cannot be touched. They can't be taken by Yahweh's people. The earth swallows them up. Fire consumes the 250. If you know the story, 250 of Harak's people went up to the thing, up to the door of the tent of meeting. By the way, they were all the people gathering at the tent of the meeting were in the courtyard, and they were at the tent of meeting. And I'm not sure if they're supposed to be or not. I tend to think only the Levites were allowed in there. 16, 41 to 48. "But all the congregation of Israel grumbled against Moshe and Aaron on the next day." My goodness. Aren't these people getting it? Well, we're the same way, is my point here. You have killed the people of Yahweh. The people of Yahweh, what's that sound like? That's left over?
the campaign of socialism, communism. We the people are the democracy, that you can't do anything to us the people. And they're accusing, and they have overthrown again. They have assembled against, 42, and it came to be when the congregation assembled against Moshe and against Aaron, they turned the appointment to the tent of appointment, the esteem of Yahweh, or the glory appeared. And Yahweh has now said twice, look, move away from these people, I'm going to kill them. I'm going to kill them all. And Moshe said to Aaron, take the fire holder and put fire in it from the slaughter place and lay incense on it and go, hurry to the congregation. Make atonement for them, for wrath has gone out from Yahweh. The plague has begun. Now, I get this plague as people dying fast. In the time that it took Aaron to hear this command from Moshe, to think about it, wait a minute, Yahweh says he's going to wipe us out, all of them, and you're telling me to run into it, and we're seeing them die already? Aaron bravely risked his life in obedience to the word of Moshe, which seemed to even not be what Yahweh was doing. Wow! Reminds me of Yeshua, the high priest, who was obedient to the point of death. Aaron probably thought he was going to be killed. And he ran into the crowd and ran into the midst to the point that he stood between the dead and the living. That means dying, 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 dying in the crowd. Aaron running, 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 catching up to the dying, standing between the dead and the living with the incense smoke, somehow stopping the angel of death, somehow stopping, maybe it's the incense, the fragrance, reminds Yahweh of his promises to Abraham and his seed. I don't know. But he stops it. And in that amount of time, we lost 14,700 people. Wow. That's a lot to bury. In the last part of this, Yahweh says, I'm going to stop the grumbling of the people against me. Every leader of all the 12 tribes bring a rod and put Aaron's with it. And whomever I choose, whichever rod buds, is going to be my leader, my high priest. And the story goes, Moses goes back into the holy place the next day. Aaron's rod not only budded, blossomed, and was bearing ripe almonds overnight. And the beauty of that to me, I think, is that when Yahweh gave a sign to the people of this is my high priest, he took a dead stick and made it alive again. And in the same way that he raised up Yahshua as our high priest today and for all times, he took that which had died, which ran into the midst of the people of death, risking his life, sacrificing his life. Yahweh made him alive again with the one sign, I'm going to be in the earth dead 3 days like Jonah, and then I'm going to be made alive again. Baruch Hashem.